I'm Chris Youngs, and I'm a monster. And I'm listening to The Tome.
I'm Scott Rouse, and I'm a monster too. And you're listening to The Tome.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network. GBNcom.com.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 63. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we'll be getting a first glance at 4th edition. We have a contributor from back in the day, William Paul. You may remember him from his Dungeon Magazine reviews. Well, he got his hands on the 4th edition core books a bit earlier than expected, so today, we're going to bring you a first glance at the 4th edition core books. First, if you like what you hear, make sure you head over to The Tome Show and check out the 4th edition books in the store and help the show pay the bills along the way. This is, of course, only a first glance. There will be more in-depth coverage of 4th edition as the chance comes up, but also be aware this is probably going to be the last episode for a couple of weeks. I'm not going anywhere and I'm not abandoning you as 4th edition comes out, but I am moving off to Raleigh, North Carolina this week, and I won't have internet, let alone have time to podcast for a little while. But hey, if there's anyone out in the area who wants to join a 4th edition game, I'm in a group getting one going. Okay, enough of me shilling. Time to check out 4th edition D&D. William Paul?
Greetings. This is William Paul with a first look at the Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition core rulebooks. The Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, and Monster Manual. Now, when I received these books, I was quite excited due to the fact that the actual release date is the 6th of June, 2008, and as of this recording, June 1st, 2008, I was able to jump the gun, so to speak. Now, this is not intended as a full review of the books, just my first thoughts, first impressions, after having read through the books. I would expect that The Tome will be doing a more thorough, in-depth review of these books. The first book, The Player's Handbook, is divided into 10 chapters. The first chapter is a basic overview of roleplay games. Most gamers will skim through this chapter, but with Wizards of the Coast's intention of this edition to bring in new gamers, the actual explanation and definition of what to expect as a player at the gaming table, what the game's all about, is quite nice. They present it very nicely, very easily. There is a sidebar about the history of D&D, so that those new gamers, after they've picked up this edition, if they're interested, they know what prior editions they can look for. Then moving on to Chapter 2, we have a basic overview of character creation, detailed description of ability scores. Rolling your stats is listed as the third of three stat generation options. Major contrast from prior editions, but to each their own. It also lists alignment, which has changed dramatically. Instead of 9 alignments, there's only a list of 5. Lawful good, good, unaligned, which is different than just true neutral, evil, and then chaotic evil. The book does go out so far to say that players should be either lawful good or good characters. It looks like the alignments are a bit more broad than the previous 9 alignments, and I think it makes it very easy to remove the problem that most DMs had of that player that wanted the chaotic neutral character that's just, I'm a selfish dick, and you know, I can do what I want, but I'm still not evil. And it also lists the good deities, I believe a total of 11 unaligned deities. The evil deities are not listed here. They are listed in the Dungeon Master's Guide. There's also approximately 1 full page of advice on expanding the fluff description of your character. 1 whole page, I tell you. Yeah. Let's see, Chapter 2 also gives a description of the advancement from level to level, explanation of the 3 tiers of play. Then, moving on to Chapter 3, we have 4-page description of each of the 8 races. Each page is divided into 2 columns. First page of those 2, half page of crunch, half page of illustration. The second page is all fluff for that race. Then in chapter 4, we have an explanation of powers, how they work, how to read the power stat block, a list of all the class descriptions. Each class has essentially 2 builds, 2 suggestions on how to set up the character. Then there's 4 paragon paths for each class. Paragon paths are additional abilities that can be selected at levels 11 through 20 that complement your base class's abilities, and then 4 epic destinies in total. Epic destiny is similar to a paragon path in that it is additional benefits, a little bit more broad. We have Archmage, Demigod, Deadly Trickster, and Eternal Seeker. They're a little bit more broad and vague. Each one of the epic destinies would be able to be applied to any of the races. Then skills. In the next chapter, quite a departure from 3rd edition skills. If you're used to 3rd edition skills, you might have to unlearn what you're used to. There's been consolidation of a lot of skills. There's athletics and acrobatics, as opposed to swim, climb, jump, and balance, tumble. Athletics is essentially any of those strength-based athletic feats, acrobatics, dex. A lot of the rogue skills have been combined into thievery. And then there's also no skill ranks, and how you determine what your skill modifier is a matter of half your level, your ability modifier. Whether or not you're trained or not trained, you get a +5 bonus, I believe it is, and then any miscellaneous modifiers. The one thing that really jumped out at me about the skills chapter is some skills take up a lot of space. Some skills don't. Diplomacy is a paragraph long. That's it. I don't know what the intent behind that was, but whatever. Then with Chapter 6, we have feats. They are broken down into categorized by what tier they're in. The heroic tier, paragon tier, epic tier. Then there's different types of feats. Class feats, racial feats, divine feats, multi-class feats. You know, this is the area where probably I can say the best way to describe 4th edition and these core books is probably best represented by this chapter. It looks like that these books are a good start. I guess with me being used to the wealth of information available from all the various 3.5 source books, the fact that this is all I get with the core books in 4th edition, I didn't get as much as I was anticipating, and I guess I'll just have to wait to see what comes out of D&D Insider and any future source books. Then moving on to the next chapter is equipment. Lists the different currencies. Copper, silver, gold, which have a 1-to-10 ratio between them, for each level moving up. And then gold, platinum, and astral diamonds, the new standard, which have the ratio of 1-to-100 each time you move up the scale. So why they needed to change that scale very easily could have copper and silver each equal 100-to-1, or 1-to-100. Each type of armor now has a minimum enhancement bonus, where I guess if there's going to be a magic version of that armor, there it would have to be a minimum of so high to be able to use that for magic. Not sure I see the reasoning. Then we move on to weapons, where there are some nice information, I thought. New weapon qualities and such in just regular weapons. You have either one-hand, two-handed weapons, whether it's a heavy or a light blade. One quality that a weapon can have is high crit. Now, typically in 4th edition, if you roll a critical hit, you automatically deal max damage. There are a few weapons that are listed as high crit. Basically what that means is that in addition to max damage, you also roll the weapon's damage normally, and that is on top of the max damage. So all you scimitar and great axe wielders, yeah, there's definitely an advantage to keep wielding those. Magic items have levels now. The level of the item to correspond with the level of the character that should be using it appropriately. Then we have, for Chapter 8, we're provided with a synopsis of quests, where one of the things that they're introducing in the core rules of the game is quest completion XP, where you actually are given a task and get experience for completing that task rather than the experience that's gained by through the process of completing it. Chapter 8 also provides explanation of combat encounters, explanation of skill challenges, what to expect from them, which skill challenges are basically non-combat combats. That's the quick and dirty description of them. There's also a listing of milestones. Now, milestones are a means of, after an encounter, if you don't rest, if you just continue on and then succeed through a second encounter, you've reached a milestone. There are benefits for continuing without resting. You get an additional action point, which provides for you the ability to make another action during a turn. And then, if you reach a milestone, your magic item abilities refresh. Then there is an explanation of overland travel, light, interactive environments. The chapter then goes in to describe the different types of rest, either a short rest, an extended rest. An extended rest is now 6 hours instead of 8 hours. And then chapter 9 is the combat chapter. Now, attack of opportunities are going by the wayside. They've gone the way of the dodo. Instead, you'll want to remember the term opportunity attacks. Essentially, they're the same, just under a different name. Then we have an explanation of the turn, which essentially there's an upkeep phase at the beginning of each person's turn, their action phase, and then an upkeep at the end of the turn. Some abilities and actions resolve at the start of someone's turn, or some resolve at the end of the turn. And so that's just a structure to help people remember that, oh, I have these to take care of. Kind of reminds me of a card game. You have your close attacks, which are essentially area of effect attacks that are centered on the character, and they are most likely immune to the ability. Your attack bonus isn't necessarily based off of strength or dex. It depends on what class they are, and I believe your wizard uses intelligence for their attacks. There's a description of various conditions. Then there's durations for some effects that I think is intended to replace ability damage. And now all saving throws are rolled with a D2. Falling damage is a D10, not a D6. Second Wind gives you a +2 defense to all 4 of your defenses, in addition to providing the healing, allowing you to use what's called a healing surge. And all characters have negative hit points equal to half their maximum hit points. And then the last chapter in the book, Rituals, is essentially all your non-combat magic spells, whether from a cleric, a wizard, sorcerer, all those are now rituals. Anyone can cast a ritual from a ritual scroll. Even the dumb fighter with the -4 intelligence modifier, he can cast it, because apparently the process of making the scroll imbues it with all the magic necessary to cast it, and the character using the scroll just activates it. And I'm sure that this first look at the Player's Handbook seems somewhat choppy, and I do apologize for that. I'm sure we will come back with a much in-depth review of the book as well. That is the review of the Player's Handbook, 4th edition, and I will be back with more, the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Monster Manual. This is William Paul with part 2 of my 4th edition core rulebook, First Glance. Last time, we went over the Player's Handbook. Today, we'll be going over the Monster Manual and Dungeon Master's Guide. I do apologize for this up front, but my comments on the Monster's Manual is extremely brief compared to the other two books. So, that being said, we'll go ahead and start there. With the Monster Manual, essentially, we have a catalog of monsters. No big surprise there for anyone. In the beginning of the book, we have an explanation of the monster stat block, what the various things are, what they mean. Then, let's see, it does list in the Monster Manual in a small section. It's something to keep in mind. I don't believe I've noticed this anywhere in the Dungeon Master's Guide, that monsters get healing surges. I think one for the heroic tier, two for the paragon tier, and then three for the epic tier. I think this might be something that rule lawyers will love, because it will be something that everyone will remember reading once, but can never remember where it is. Then, moving on to the content of the book, the actual catalog of monsters. Like I said, not much I'm going to say with this. I was surprised that, as far as the entry in dragons, only the chromatic dragons are in the book. The metallic dragons are not, gem dragons, no other types of dragons. Did, I believe, have a listing of all five of the dragon types, chromatic dragon types, black, white, blue, green, red. Then there was a few pages on dragon spawn. I remember those creatures from, I believe it was the Monster Manual 4 or 5 for 3.5. The one thing I had never understood about dragon spawn at that point, and that still carries over to the 4th edition version, is why not separate them by color and then by type? So, like, you've got your red spawn Belcher and your, I believe it's a blue spawn God Slayer. You know, why not have a blue spawn Belcher or a red spawn God Slayer? You know, mix them up. You know, set up the rules where you can have that. I mean, all you'd have to do is change the breath weapon type or immunity type, and you've got it right there for you. Then, my last comment for the Monster Manual is the racial traits for the dozen or so monsters that would allow players to have a player character of these races. Honestly, the information provided in this section provides just as much information as the race chapter in the Player's Handbook. The only thing missing is the illustration and the page of fluff per race. I don't see why they didn't add these couple pages into the Player's Handbook, but to each their own. Then, moving on to the Dungeon Master's Guide, in the first two chapters, we have advice on running a game, teaching a game, providing an explanation of expectations of the Dungeon Master. Lists the differences in regard to having just one or multiple DMs. Gives a listing of different types of players, what the various types look for out of the game, how to help create a fun atmosphere for different types of gamers, such as the power gamer or the storyteller, advice on how to balance it all. Then, with Chapter 3, we have a overview of the combat system. This book assumes that you've read through the Player's Handbook. It provides additional details on specific situations, such as underwater combat, mounted combat, for example. It provides lists of diseases and poisons. Then, moving on to Chapter 4, we have an explanation of monster roles. And just as a side note, I love minions. I mean, yes, there's the stupid little joke from the little 4th edition video with the gnome who gets a minion badger. No, I'm sorry. I just love the concept of being able to now set up a combat encounter where there actually is an orc horde that the heroes have to take down. It's beautiful. Chapter 4 also explains the mathematics of encounters. Advises that for there to actually be a challenge, the level of the encounter should be plus or minus 4 compared to the character levels. So if you go below that, it's just no longer a challenge for the characters. Too much higher than that, and it's just too challenging, impossible to accomplish for the characters. Chapter 4 also has encounter templates, suggestions on different types of encounters that would be able to be used. Then moving on to Chapter 5, we have skills, an explanation, a detailed description and explanation of how to use skill challenges, how to run them, how best to, instead of saying no to your players when they offer an idea on how to use a skill that you hadn't thought of, instead of saying no, just say yes to them, let them run with their idea, and find a ways to be able to help it affect the skill challenge. Chapter 6 has information on using and modifying pre-generated modules, building your own modules, using information on quests in different mixes of encounters, different mixes of settings, and suggestions on different allies, NPCs to use in your encounters. Okay, Chapter 7. I only have a couple things to say in regard to Chapter 7. Chapter 7 talks about rewards for the players. I don't know how it got past the editor of the book, but one suggestion that's made in Chapter 7 is to go ahead and give experience to absent players. So you set up a game, you do all the work to set it up and have it ready for your players that, you know, this day and age, it takes a lot to get a group together to be able to run and play the game. And someone who doesn't have even the common courtesy to show up, yeah, go ahead and give them a fair share of the experience as well. No, I'm sorry. I just can't agree with that. Then moving on to Chapter 8, we have advice on running long campaigns, starting characters at levels higher than level 1. An explanation, page and a half explanation of the different tiers. Then, let's see, moving on to Chapter 9, gives an explanation of the default setting. And of course, you can't see this out there in the Potosphere, but default in air quotes. Though I do have to say I did enjoy the fact that they did mention Sigil and the Lady of Pain. You know, she's got the Lady of Pain, she's got a small part of my heart that belongs to her and no one else. I'm glad they didn't do away with her. Then moving on, we have Chapter 10. Information on being able to customize or create your own monsters, providing different templates to be able to apply to the monsters. NPC generation, lists of how to create random dungeons and encounters. And I believe it was here that there was the advice on being able to run a game sans DM. You know, it could be interesting if you put all the prep work as a group into building a dungeon crawl without the Dungeon Master. Then the last chapter in the book is an example town. I believe it's the town of Falkrest, I believe the name of it is. I did not look through it because I know I will not be running the first few 4th edition games that my group will have, and I didn't want to accidentally read through any spoilers. But it looks quite comprehensive from the parts that I was skimming through. That is it, the first glance look at the Monster's Manual and Dungeon Master's Guide. I do want to say I do appreciate Jeff for allowing me to do this first look at the core books. I appreciate Wizards of the Coast for putting out a game that, though their marketing department, in my opinion, needs to be fired, the game designers did pull off what looks to be a very, very interesting game. I hope to see you on the other side of the dice one day. Thank you for listening. This is William Paul for The Tome.
Okay, well, that's the first glance at 4th edition. No promo this time since I don't really have the time to put one together. But this has been episode 63. As always, I want to encourage you to send your feedback to thetomeshow@gmail.com or join in the discussion on the forums at thetomeshow.com. Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews or votes on various sites, but more than that, tell people you know that might be interested in the show. And make sure you're talking about The Tome at worldwide D&D Game Day events this weekend. Also, don't forget to consider checking out The Tome's Amazon store. The show gets a part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And once again, you can find all of this at thetomeshow.com. And don't forget that The Tome is part of the Fistful of Comics and Games Cooperative. So head on over there to check out Fistful of Comics and Games and Gamers Haven for all kinds of good, geeky, and gaming goodness. This has been episode 63, 4th edition first glance of
The Tome.